We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to another Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And Jack, how are you?
I haven't booked my flights to New York yet, Nick, and I still want to. Will you still hang out with me if the Nets don't make the playoffs?
I will still hang out with you. Maybe we can travel to Philadelphia if the Nets don't make the playoffs. It's been probably the worst week of the season. You know, lost tonight, 117-88, and just another lifeless performance. Just a ton of things out of sync offensively, defensively. Lineups all over the place. Just everything kind of went wrong again.
Yeah, I think someone put it online and it sort of echoed my sentiments. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. That's what Brooklyn is right now.
Yeah, it's been rough. It's just like all over the place. You know, offensively, they're just out of rhythm. Like, you know, the passes aren't crisp. The shots are bad. Bad shot selection. The ball's sticking. The ball movement isn't there. Guys are almost like cutting into space where the other guy's cutting a drive. It's just like the chemistry is all over the place too.
Yeah, the chemistry is certainly way out of whack. And you couldn't time it worse for this to sort of be happening when the Nets are supposed to, you know, beef up their record a little bit and, you know, heading into an even tougher stretch. But these things happen, and you know the adversity that we're dealing with now, it's going to determine where we land in the playoffs, if we land in the playoffs.
Yeah, you know, in some ways, you know, obviously it does suck to have three games like this and be on a losing streak, but in ways it's better than it happening at the end of March or the beginning of April. Like, they have time to fix this. You know, they have played six games in the last 9 days since post-All-Star break. Obviously, they were well-rested, but they have been playing a lot of basketball. And on a positive note, 12 games in the next 29 days. And then in the beginning of April, 5 games in 10 days. So they should be well rested. A lot of teams, you know, ahead of them or behind them have played less games than them. So this is an opportunity for the Nets to kind of get some things right and hopefully find that rhythm sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always a lot more jovial and more productive after a good night's sleep. So let's hope the Nets are over that stretch. But Nick, we'll address some of the comments in the chat right now. SSV has a couple. Take Graham out now and put LeVert on the bench. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think I messaged you that, what, in the third quarter, I think it's time for Graham to get benched. It's not even the fact that, like, he doesn't bring anything offensively and teams aren't defending him, especially tonight. Kelly Olynyk was pretty much giving them another rim protector because he didn't have to worry about him. But defensively, he just hasn't been great either. You know, being only 6'5", 6'6", going up to a guy like that, he's not even impacting his shots at the rim or at the three-point line. I think at this point in the season, like we kind of talked about on a little bit in the last show, LeVert brings that perimeter defense that you might need from that position. It's time to put somebody bigger like a Damari Keller or Rodions, who I thought Rodions was nice. As soon as he came in the game, you felt his impact tonight.
Oh, yeah, big time. I think Rodions was probably the only positive from tonight's performance. And your thoughts on LeVert to the bench?
I don't think it's a terrible idea. I mean, I think it might allow him to get his rhythm back. You know, I mentioned this to you maybe about a week ago, like going against second unit guys will be a lot easier for him to kind of get that juice back. The only difference is, you know, his pairing with Jared Allen works out so well. We saw a little bit of that early in the game. It's just like Ed Davis doesn't provide that same element and they were a little bit offbeat, but some of that could just come from not playing a ton together. I wouldn't be completely opposed to it if they wanted to start a lineup, let's say D'Angelo Russell, Joe Harris, Damari Carroll, Rodions, and Jared Allen.
Yeah, I like that lineup a lot. I think you need to back the guys that are in form, and those are the guys that are in form right now. But Jacob Loggins certainly doesn't think so. He says D'Lo back to third string behind Karras and Spencer. Nick, thoughts?
I think one thing for D'Angelo, I don't think it's necessarily been completely just on him playing bad. Like, teams are reacting differently to him. We saw Miami really try to force the ball out of his hands tonight. He probably got a little bit frustrated. I think his defense has kind of gone down a little bit over the last week or so, but that could be said for the entire team. He doesn't look quite as spry, so maybe some of that workload he had in February. Like we mentioned, All-Star break isn't really a break for guys that go to All-Star weekend, so maybe he's just a little tired. He hasn't looked quite as spry. You know, he's still hitting some of those big shots, and defenses are reacting. I think it's so much more on the coaching staff a little bit to help him out.
I think he's almost playing a little bit too selflessly as well, because he's trying to be that leader that defers a little bit, get his boys going. I think Coach Kenny needs to ride him out a little bit, because he is our star player. He is the guy that is in form, the guy who has been healthy all season. Let D'Angelo lead this team out of the abyss. I think that's easier said than done. But a lot of the time, we've gone back to Coach Kenny not knowing what to do with these players, giving those 28, 29 minutes, rather than, you know, giving D'Lo 35 and letting him do the thing, because he's our best player right now. Karras can be, Spencer can be on nights. And we saw some Jared Dudley tonight as well, which was just a sort of filling with some leadership and stuff. But I think D'Lo needs to be playing that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think he needs to they need to find ways to get him more comfortable. I thought Miami just really disrupted him tonight. You know, off the screens, they were trapping him. The Nets didn't react well, and I think some of that's not just on the coaching staff, but his teammates as well. And then just the overall ball sticking a little bit. Like, the team just isn't playing well, and that impacts him. And I feel like he feels like he needs to get the offense going, because guys aren't passing the ball right, and he wants to infuse that. And now it's just like kind of confusing him and what he needs to do in his role. And I do think it gets a lot more complicated when you're pretty much the guy. You know, Shabazz wasn't great during that stretch. You know, LeVert was out, Dinwiddie was out. Now he's the guy. He's taking all the shots. He has the high usage rate. And now that changes when you add two more ball handlers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it makes it way more complicated. I think they need to figure out really soon, because that is going to be the key thing. If those three guys are playing well, and, you know, at the start of the season, that was a real sort of key sticking point and a key point of emphasis for the Nets and their success. Obviously, the injuries to the two guys and the resting here and there, it's going to be what determines our success going forward. Yes, you know, Jared Dudley in that four position is going to be important as well. But I'm not necessarily totally in on the fact that that is the be-all and end-all for the Nets' woes. But speaking of that four position, Logan LDG, what do you think about Dudley starting with Kurucs taking most of the 4 minutes?
I mean, he did start, you know, a good chunk of the season, different parts of the year. He wasn't terrible. He didn't play starter minutes. He kind of just filled in that role. I think he might actually help the team a little bit more than Graham. And I think about it this way. If you're going to play a zone heavy defense, you don't necessarily need amazing on ball defenders. You need better team defenders. That's one thing Jared Dudley's pretty good at, communicating, rotating to the right position. So I wouldn't be completely opposed to that, but I'd probably be more interested in Dudley playing the four off the bench and Rodion starting and getting a big chunk of the minutes.
Yeah, I'd be with that. SSV has chimed in again, Nick. Benching Allen for Davis, especially when we're struggling to rebound. Before we do address that, I was looking up some stats over our losing streak since January 31. The Nets, in terms of defensive rebounding percentage, have been pretty pitiful. They've ranked 27th overall, just ahead of the Houston Rockets, Golden State Warriors, and the Phoenix Suns. So I know that defensive rebounding, for me, is the key crux of a lot of our defensive woes. It's the simplest thing to do, and I think our starting lineup was quite pitiful. Jared Allen, again, wasn't showing enough there. The guards and the wings aren't showing enough there either. I think that that's one area that you should be able to clean up with just more energy and just a change of mindset. So I think it's simple things. When Rodions was out there, he was hunting those defensive rebounds like they were offensive rebounds, and he was Ed Davis. So I think that's one area that we can change and should be able to change, not necessarily easily, but, you know, but without Hassan Whiteside, you know, you should be able to out rebound a team like the Miami Heat.
Yeah, no, and I think Yes Network put up the stats during the game, and, you know, during December and January, they were good, and since then, they've just dropped, and I think, you know, it's a team effort. You do need bigger guys out there. Rodion's, like you said, came and got the rebounds. Damari's been a good rebounder for his position. Dudley isn't necessarily an amazing rebounder, but I will give him credit for putting bodies on guys, boxing people out. I think it's got to be a team effort. We need to see all the guys kind of attack. A lot of times, this doesn't go for just rebounding. It goes through the offense. It goes through the defense. You just guys standing around and ball watching.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was just grabbing a drink. It's really hot down here. But I agree. I think that it just seems like there's that lack of focus and engagement at times. And I think because the Nets are healthy right now, they're sort of using that as an to me anyway, the optics seems like they're using it as an excuse to be like, look, you know, Alan Crabb doesn't need to do this because, you know, Joe Harris is on fire. And, you know, Rondell Hollis or Trevion Graham doesn't need to do this because Rodion Skurdus is healthy and Jared Dudley's back. I think the guys just need to have that little bit of extra focus. And I think the endeavor is okay. It's just not all fitting and meshing well. But there is a lot of issues. And harking back to that that comment earlier, Nick, would you start Ed Davis over Jared Allen right now? He has been incredibly poor over this short stretch.
I mean, I maybe would do it just to send a message to Jared Allen. But I think Jared Allen opens up a completely different element offensively with his vertical spacing. You know, Ed Davis has been solid finishing around the rim, but he's not going to finish a ton of alley-oops. And I think that's what Jared Allen does. We saw a couple plays tonight that really worked out well. And it's just like, maybe he's fatigued. Maybe he needs some rest. And we talked about this before. I think the Nets still really need that third big.
Yeah, Frank Kaminsky, Nick. Come on, mate. Get around it.
Honestly, I don't know who they could even, you know, get at this point that would really help them, but I think they need to consider someone. I don't even know if it's Alan Williams. Just like, I think Jared Allen might need some rest. He just doesn't look as spry. Even a couple of plays, you know, tonight and in the previous game, usually he would throw it down. He laid it in and he missed one or two of those. And I think he's a little fatigued.
It certainly looks that way. And I think that, you know, you see, we made the comparison with Mitchell Robinson before. Mitchell Robinson's starting to hit some really good form because, you know, the rookies, it takes a little bit longer to figure out what the game is like. And that's what we saw Jared Allen was like in his rookie season. You know, he found that form, got in the starter's position, but, you know, he was notching up double-doubles like it was no one else's business. He was blocking shots. He was on House of Highlights, ESPN, all that sort of jazz. I think when you don't have the fulcrum to your defense and a big part of your offense in terms of nailing screens, I think that's one area as well. The screening has really dropped, and that's left, like, it's been a lot weaker, and it's forced guys like Joe Harris, Alan Crabb, guys who, you know, thrive off that to sort of create their own. And they're obviously going to be a lot better when they have those open looks. But Nick, via Young on Twitter, major shakeups needed. Thoughts on this? Shorten the rotation, improve rebounding, start D'Lo, Joe, Rudy, Carol, and Allen. We've spoken about that. Bring Karras, Dinwiddie, Crabb, Davis off the bench. Sub so we don't have much overlap with the three main guards, so they can all be the lead ball handler, each one on the court. I don't mind that.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I don't know if they did it. We said a little bit on the last show, maybe going to a nine-man rotation might work out a little bit better. You know, Damari and Rodion's then occasionally just playing small. I wouldn't be completely against it, and I think it worked. And I think at certain times early in the year before D'Lo and Karras really got in sync, I thought he played a little bit better with Dinwiddie at times too. Because Dinwiddie, even though he can still score and drives a lot and will, you know, take his shots, I feel like he can focus a little bit more on facilitating and doesn't impact his game. Where D'Angelo, you can still tell there's times where he has a hard time balancing it out.
Yeah, and our boy Will, writer at OTG, Will Jackson, has made a point in terms of in relation to Ed Davis. He hasn't played more than 9.5 minutes versus Charlotte and Washington. So it may be, and he makes the point that Kenny needs to figure out how to use him a little bit better because he, you know, offensive rebounding machine, we know what Ed Davis can do. You know, he was being touted as the best pickup in Nets history in terms of free agency. So I think Ed Davis has a huge role to play, and he should have been feasting on a night like tonight. I mean, he had probably one or two good plays, but, you know, just doing the rundown for Nets Republic, which will be on their side soon enough, he just wasn't impactful enough, and a lot of these guys weren't.
To get back to the previous question from one of the other viewers, I actually wouldn't mind where Kenny almost plays whichever center matches up better. You know, Bam's a little bit bigger and physical. He was more physical than Jared Allen tonight. That might have been a better matchup for Ed Davis. And then, you know, you put Jared Allen against Udonis Haslam. He should be able to feast on him. And I think there's different matchups out there where, you know, Ed Davis can bring that physical presence and then Jared Allen brings that quickness and, you know, he can do the oops. And if he has to play a little bit with the bench, like a guy like Dinwiddie or a guy like Karis LeVert, who he even said at All-Star Weekend, he had the best chemistry with Karis.
Yeah, and I think that that sort of is an advocate for putting Karras on the bench. But there are changes that need to be made. Some home truths, I'm sure, will be set on that flight home back to Brooklyn and as we're heading into the next game. But, Nick, another one from Logan D. Gilchrist. Who takes the lion's share of the blame if the Nets do miss the playoffs? I think it'll probably be Coach Kenny just because it's always the coach at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's usually going to be the coach. They're going to get the blame. I mean, I think realistically, it's a combination of the players and the coach. I know people will say Sean Marks, but I'm not really that offended that he didn't make a move at the deadline for a four. At the end of the day, the Nets' best case scenario was they're going to make, you know, a 6 or 8 seed and get knocked out in the first round, most likely, unless they were able to, you know, steal something in the first round. So I don't mind not trading a first round pick and trying to get, you know, Nikola Mirotic or something like that. Because we've seen in the past, the Nets have traded plenty of picks and they've turned into all-stars or future all-stars. So keeping your picks and wanting to build up the assets, I think was a smart move. So I don't give much blame to Sean Marks. I think it would just be more so on the coaching staff and on the players. And I think from the coaching staff's perspective, it's just like we talked about this on the outlet with Brad Stevens, trying to get all these personalities to work together. I don't think it's so much the personalities, it's more the style of play and just making the proper adjustments so everybody has purpose on the court and they're providing some type of value that plays to their best skill set.
Yeah, I think, you know, we saw tonight there was an outcry, not just from you, Nick, but plenty of other guys on this Twitter, that we saw the exact same starting lineup. And that starting lineup was piss poor in the last matchup. So why would you not make a change just to see what could happen? So obviously, if we don't start to see those changes, then the criticism is only going to grow and grow. And I know for me, the expectations at the start of the season weren't great. You know, I had them about 35 wins or so. I can't necessarily remember. I have to check back on OGD basketball. But mine weren't great. So the fact that we now have these expectations, and Joe Harris mentioned on the Zach Lowe podcast, they are speaking playoffs. You know, the guys talk about it. And you can't help but not. But now that you have these expectations on you, the pressure is there to perform. And right now, we're dwindling under that pressure.
Yeah, and you know, some of the teams are competing with, you know, Detroit has been in this position before, competing for a playoff spot. Charlotte's been in this position, what seems, for like the last 5 years. Miami obviously has been fighting for an eighth seed for a while now since LeBron left. The only team that's new to it is Orlando, and like we've said, they have a really easy schedule. So it's just like the Nets are in a different situation. They need to learn and kind of expand on that and adjust. And I think, like we talked about a lot yesterday, the adjustments just aren't there. Like, teams are throwing different looks at them, reading the scouting report, you know, making plays, and the Nets just aren't adjusting to what the other team is doing. Or even the officiating in certain things. Like, the officiating tonight was like, all right, we're going to let you play a physical game. The Nets didn't turn up their physicality.
No, they didn't. They didn't hit their shots either. And SSV has come back, Nick. In relation to the zone, so I think we could probably have a general chat about defense here. Thoughts on when to use the zone and when to go back to man-to-man? Kenny doesn't seem to make the switch quick enough. I'll go with, I remember doing a pre-gamer for and mentioning the zone for NetsRepublic.com. Mostly, and I think this was following one of the Spurs matchups, I think the close loss, that we generally go to it after made baskets.
Yep.
Because it allows you to set up, gives you the time. So if it's off a miss, you know, obviously you have to get back in transition. You don't have the time or the requisite energy to sort of just get set up immediately. So you have to go man-to-man. So generally that's when it is used. But I think that because there are these new guys now, not necessarily new guys, just the full rotation and the communication isn't necessarily there. And I think communication is the number one thing with the zone. And there were far too many open looks for a Miami Heat team who have some okay three-point shooters. You know, Kelly Olynyk was killing us from there. And, you know, Dwayne Wade was hitting the one or two as well. So I think those are my thoughts on the zone and defense in general. I just don't think that there is the engagement and just we need those hustle plays and the deflections to sort of really come up.
Yeah, I think communication's key. All the different lineup combination, guys don't know where they're supposed to be. Also think it's someone, you know, Miami's another team that plays a ton of zone. They were able to kind of beat the zone. They understood what they needed to do to beat the zone. Now the scouting report's out how to beat the zone against the Nets. They either need to adjust. We kind of talked about it, you know, going back to the last show, a lot of the same issues we saw last night is they're not adjusting, throwing different zone looks out there. You know, they're mostly running a 2-3 zone, or maybe they need to switch it up and do something a little bit different, or just stick to man-to-man. But overall, like you said, Jack, the defense isn't at a high enough intensity level. The other team does not feel the Nets. They allow them to get comfortable people early in the game, start hitting some shots. And we talked about this against the Hornets. I keep going back to the previous game, but teams are getting right in front of the rim. They're getting that free throw line to the paint area and getting those shots. And that's just an easy shot to hit. You're going to build your confidence. You're going to start hitting threes. You know, you said the Heat are an okay three-point shooting team. I know talking to Jorge, who covers the Heat for us, you know, they miss a ton of wide open shots, but if you allow them to get confidence early in the game, they're going to hit their shots. And the Nets just don't bring it enough defensively and make you feel them. Like you said, the deflections, like you need to get deflections. All it does is disrupt the offense, and that's what you need to do. And the Heat did a great job of disrupting our offense, and we couldn't adapt, and we didn't do that to them at all.
No, we didn't. Obviously, they're an incredibly well-drilled team, you know, under Eric Spoelstra and such. But Crazy Dean in the comments as well, Nick, making a comment. We need to run with a lineup that can switch everything a little bit more. And we sort of talked about, if you have a guy like Rodions and Damari out there, I think that is a lot more switchable and lay off the zone for a little bit. So what do you think about the Nets' ability to play a more switching style of defense?
I think if you're going to play a switching style of defense, team rebounding is the most important thing. You know, you need to come together and rebound, because let's say we have Jared Allen defending, Winslow at the three-point line, putting up a shot. Like, the team has to come in and box out, bam. You know what I mean? Even if you're going to play small, you're going to find a way to box out and play, you know, team rebounding. I think you could even play the lineup with Jared Allen. Like, I think you could switch 1-5, and that's just another thing that Kenny could do. You know, sometimes we're not going to switch, other times we're going to switch, and that just disrupts the offense and what they're looking for when you're coming at them. And we talked about it, when the Nets were at their best defensively, it was when they're throwing a ton of different looks at the other team.
I think switching only works when you have Caris LeVert running the floor for me. I think if you have D'Lo and Spencer out there, those guys, especially D'Angelo Russell, they'll hunt that switch, you know, a la what the Houston Rockets love to do. They just find that switch that they want, and then they just attack off it with a guy like James Harden. So I think that in terms of switching, yes, it can work in principle, but like you mentioned, there are a lot of things around it that need to sort of be enacted for it to fully be at its best. But Jose makes a nice point. Jose M in the comments as well, Nick. I feel we stick with lineups too long when it's going wrong. I agree, because I feel like it's always like Coach Kenny waits that 5 minutes too long for the timeout, those 2 minutes too long, that one game too long to change the lineups, you know, rather than being proactive. And we've said at the start of the season, you know, that's one more thing we wanted to see from Coach Kenny. And he showed that during that really successful streak, whereas now he's been a lot more reactive.
Yeah, and just one thing to touch on the switching. I think you have to play great team defense to switch. But to get back to this, I think things are going like slightly bad. Like in the second quarter, you could tell the Nets were out of sync, but they were, you know, within the game, 8 points, 10 points. And Kenny really needed to make a change in that second quarter. You know, he needed to make some type of lineup adjustment, and he didn't. He waited until it was 15, 16, 20-point lead for Miami. Then he started changing things up. Same thing in Charlotte. You know, he went to that small ball switching lineup. That's when the Nets got it close. He needs to be more proactive, like you said, Jack, in making the switch and not waiting till the game gets blown out of proportion.
Logan again, Nick, just wants us to reiterate, why hasn't Damari gotten a shot at the starting four position yet? Do you think there will be a riot if he or Rhodey aren't in the starting four position?
Yeah, well, first off, I just want to shout out to all the listeners and viewers for giving us all these great questions. But I think Nets Twitter might freak out if Graham starts next game. I think they'd even be happy at this point with Dudley starting.
Yeah, and I think... how would you rank Nick? Damari, Rhodey, and Jared? Who would you go 1, 2, 3?
I think Damari is, you know, the best player at this point, but I wouldn't be completely offended. We kind of talked about this on a lot of previous shows. Like, he fits really good with that second unit. He has some good chemistry with Spencer Dinwiddie. So if he didn't want to start him, I think that would be okay, and you want to go with Rhodeyons. But I would rank, you know, Damari and Rhodey at, you know, one, and then Dudley in his own category, where I think if you start Dudley still, you don't play him starter minutes. You're just kind of putting him out there to set the tone.
Yeah, and I think in terms of, like you mentioned, setting the tone, I think Rhodey really has a way of being able to do that just by himself through his general energy and intangibility with that. You know, him and D'Lo have this really nice chemistry that I really love. You know,
a couple alley-oops the last few games. He hasn't thrown down the dunk, but he's been a couple lands on a nice cuts.
That dunk, that posted tonight was, yeah. It seems to me Rodion's has been the only highlight guy over this stretch, whereas D'Angelo Russell nailing, he's had a couple of floaters here and there that have been insane, but Jared Allen, it seems to me like we've harked back to, you know, there's only a few highlights per game, whereas when the Nets are at their best, the bench is celebrating, everything is jovial, so... I would prefer to have actually Rodion's in that starting lineup, because I think he's proven himself, and I like Damari with the second unit as well. And obviously with the closing unit, I think he's the best closer as well. But I think there's a lot of issues in that four position. He's obviously one, but it's one we need to address. And Nick, before you get your stat out there, I wanted to look up because obviously our three-point shooting has been quite poor of late, especially over this stretch. And I found it, and we're actually 26th in the league since the end of January at 33.3%, only ahead of the Hornets, Pelicans, Grizzlies, and Suns. The Nets, rebounding and three-point shooting, I think if you're going by KPIs, key performance indicators, those are right up there in terms of how we need to be successful.
Yeah, especially three-point shooting team, and that would be like the deciding factor in a playoff series would be like, all right, the Nets got hot from three. We're kind of screwed. They have so many good three-point shooters. But when you have guys, you know, Joe Harris isn't getting the looks he needs, and Allen Crabbe's been pretty cold like the last two games, one of nine tonight from three and then one of three in the last game. And he looks like, you know, he looked good coming back initially. Now he's starting to kind of get into a slump again.
Yeah, I think that there needs to be some real emphasis on finding Joe Harris open looks, finding Allen Crabbe open looks. Damari Carroll, I think, over this stretch with Joe Harris has been our only competent three-point shooter. And that's not based on any stats, but it just seems to me he seems the most confident from there. D'Angelo Russell's obviously been a bit had his moments as well. But, you know, Spencer, Karras, all these guys who are so integral to our system haven't been able to shoot a three ball well enough. You know, Trevion Graham is an obvious point, but that's an area we really, really need to fix up.
Yeah, even, you know, like, just they don't even respect Trevion Graham's three. Like, Rodion doesn't shoot a good three-point percentage, but they at least stick out there and try to block his shot. Like, Trevion Graham, they're just like, all right, shoot it, bro. We don't care.
Yeah, and you can't have that. And I think that a lot of people have made the comparison. You have as well. You know, if that's going to happen, then you might as well just have Rondé out there because he can at least give you that defensive energy that Trevion seems to have lost a little bit. And just that sort of, you know, sometimes erratic energy, but, you know, he can get the deflections, the seals, the transition sort of stuff going. So obviously, you know, Trevion Graham's, you know, place in the Nets lineup is going to be a thing going forward. But Nick, I'm very excited. I don't know if excited is a bit heavy of a word because it's going to be probably a pretty poor stat that you're going to be using. But what do you got for me?
No, I already dropped my stat earlier in the show, Jack. It was more about the schedule.
Gotcha.
The schedule. So if you look at it this way, I'll even break it down a little bit more. 6 games in 9 days is a lot. Like, there's no way around that your team's going to be fatigued. 17 games in 39 days. So they're at an advantage for the final stretch of the season in terms of rest. And we talked about this before. A lot of teams have played less games than them. Yeah, like, they look fatigued in these last games. I'm not making excuses. They played poor. They've been out of sync. The chemistry's been bad. But I think some of it's fatigue, especially a guy like Jared Allen. I think D'Angelo Russell hasn't looked as spry. Like, I think the team just needs some juice. They're going to be able to get prepared and rested for all these games for this final stretch. So as bad as it looks right now, this team could easily bounce back and go on a nice winning streak or a nice winning stretch. You know, things look terrible at that 8-game losing streak, and things could easily bounce back from this, you know, skid that we're having right now.
Yeah, and in terms of, I think, the next sort of 5 games or so, you look at every sort of game-by-game scenario, but you judge everything off a body of the work. The last 3 games have been pitiful. You know, Miami, Washington.
Probably the worst of the season.
I would probably agree because, you know, you have the fact that, you know, most guys are healthy and you expect to be at your best with, you know, the team at its best with all guys there and the rotation sort of being at its strongest. So I think, you know, you look at another 3-game stretch and then you look at, you know, the longer stretch, you know, the 4-8, you look at those sort of collective long stretches of games and sort of judge each game individually and then as a collective because, you know, going forward, The tide needs to change because we're drowning. I'm good with the metaphor today.
Yeah, we are drowning. I mean, it just feels so strange after such like a successful stretch. It's almost like getting all these players back in all this town has just disrupted everything that was going on. Like, it's just we're trying to bring back two players of the caliber of Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie. It's just tough to infuse in a lineup, especially, like I said, when you have 6 games in 9 days.
Yeah.
No practice time. You might get like a small practice, a shoot around, but nothing too in depth. Probably the biggest thing I'm looking forward to, they have Dallas on Monday, Cleveland on Wednesday, then they have 2 days off. So you should be able to really make some true adjustments on those days.
And if the Nets lose the Cleveland game or even the Dallas game, you know, I think that, again, if I mentioned at the end of the last pod, we just need to play well. We're not playing well. There aren't any areas of our game, you know, rebounding, three-point shooting, defense. There is nothing going well with the Nets right now. Rodion's is doing okay and has been a somewhat flicker of light in this pretty dark period. Another one. I'm killing it right now. I think it's the teacher in me. But it's just been a pretty poor performance and one of the worst stretches of the seasons, like you mentioned, Nick. And Are there any other things you wanted to mention? Because, I mean, we could argue and debate about this team all day, but we thoroughly thank all the people that have been tuned in and tuning in afterwards on the pod as well.
Yeah, especially for the losses. I know it's a lot. Sometimes it's like relieving, though. I know I talked to you yesterday and I was kind of vented afterwards where I was like, all right, at least I got all my thoughts out about the Nets playing like trash and I don't have to worry about it. I think really, like, other than being out of sync, like, they have to make shots. And some of that comes with just being in sync and having rhythm. We talk about this all the time. It's such a rhythm game and there's just no rhythm at all. I think it's on the players, but it's also on the coaching staff, and they need to try to find a way to get these guys in position to really get a lot of easy layups. We see it here and there during the game, but maybe it's just a really deeper game plan for Dallas, who we talked about is not a great team at the moment, and that's two games at home where they really need to pick up two Ws.
Yep, proactive rather than reactive. You know, you don't want to change things based off things that you're doing. You know, be prepared for what Dallas is going to have for you. You know, and then, you know, scout, read all the film, watch all the film, read all the notes, whatever you got to do. And then, you know, be prepared for anything that might come your way. You know, if Trevion Graham's not shooting well, bang, take him out. If, you know, if Caris LeVert isn't playing well, bang, take him out. Let D'Lo take over things. You know, have those sort of precautions in place for when things do go wrong.
You have enough good players now, you know, not amazing players, but solid to good players, where if someone's not playing well, you can bench them. And, like, it's about the team. They're building this culture. If you have to bench a guy, you shouldn't be worried about it. It happens. You had to bench Rondé, who was probably one of the culture setters and one of the guys that you really believed in. He's got DNPs. So if you have to bench Graham, I don't think it's a big deal, and you just got to do it.
Yeah, you got to make those tough decisions. That's what why the coaches are paid the big bucks, and not necessarily the big bucks in comparison to the players, but, you know, it's why they're in the role. They're forced to make those tough decisions as part of their job. And, you know, Coach Kenny, we need you right now more than ever. Obviously, we need our players to execute as well in that sort of sense of the word, because Coach Kenny can only say so much. It's up to the players to execute. So I think the players really need to step up.
Turn up the energy, turn up the effort. Jack, I do have one question for you, though. So, you know, obviously there's been a big effort in trying to get Dinwiddie and LeVert involved and back in sync and chemistry in the, you know, the team in general. And obviously the results haven't been great. It's probably gotten there a little bit too soon. But do you think it could benefit the Nets in the long run if they're able to find this chemistry and this rhythm, getting LeVert and Dinwiddie back in rhythm when it really matters later in the season, long as they don't miss the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you want your three best players to be performing at their best once that postseason is around. But at the same time, you want to get those wins. So you're thinking semi short to long term, but you're also thinking very narrow term in terms of you want to get the win in that game. They're as simple as that. So at the same time, you need to be able to adjust to whatever is happening in the game. And I think Logan, again, has made a really good point that he finds it strange that Kenny is so hesitant to make changes to rotation right now when he was in caps lock so quick to pull D'Lo if he made any silly mistake earlier in the season. So I think Coach Kenny needs to have maybe a similar sort of mentality. If, you know, if D'Lo doesn't do a rebound, you know, if Caris LeVert misses a rotation, if Spencer misses a rotation, if Trevion doesn't hit a three, or at least isn't taking the three, or isn't playing defense, then just immediately do it. You know, back your instincts. And I think I would rather be criticizing him before making too many adjustments than not making enough.
Yeah, I think one thing with Kenny, he'll pull a guy if he doesn't do an assignment right, but if he's not playing, you know, necessarily well and not hitting shots, he doesn't pull them. Where I think that's where he needs to adjust. Like, Trevion might be doing technically everything right on the floor that he's supposed to, but he's not playing at a high enough level. So you just have to realize, like, all right, we need to take him out. Like, that's, I think, his problem is, like, hey, if you know, you miss an assignment, I'm going to bench you. But no, hey, you miss five threes and you're not providing anything offensively, I need to bench you. That's what he needs to do, and he's not doing that.
Definitely. Another one. We've got another one from Headgale Antoine. How likely are we able to win these next four games? And for those playing along at home, we've got the Mavs, we've got the Cavs, we've got the Hawks, we've got the Pistons. What are your thoughts on the record through that stretch, Nicholas?
I think, you know, obviously, best case, they win all four. You know, a semi-optimistic scenario is 3-1. I think realistically 2-2 is the most likely thing to happen, because Atlanta's been playing really well right now and Trae Young's been on like a tear, and Detroit has been probably one of the hottest teams in the East for like the last month. I think they've probably been one of the best teams in the league in February. So it's really about that Dallas and Cleveland game, but they could win those two games and then all of a sudden they could have that mojo back, that chemistry and that juice, and then all of a sudden they're back at a high level. All it takes is one game to push you back to where you were playing at.
Oh, absolutely. All it takes is one. But I think we need to probably go 3-1 over that stretch because
following need to beat Atlanta. Like you know, they're playing good, but you need to beat them because they're just not up to your level right now.
And then obviously as well, we have the Thunder and the Jazz in the next two matchups after that. So that's when the schedule gets very tricky. So obviously it's game by game proposition, all the sort of, you know, superlatives you want to use. But the Nets really need to have a good stretch here because it could get dark really quickly.
Should they have a players meeting tomorrow or a players video session again like they did after that losing streak? Or is it kind of coming too soon?
I don't know. I think that a lot of that sort of gets overblown. It certainly does help.
Joe Harris thought it really mattered a lot in that podcast, though, Jack.
Oh, he did. But at the same time, you know, I think now is where you want the coaches to sort of step up because we saw tonight, you know, D'Lo going out into the coaches' huddle, Jared Dudley saying things on the bench. Words only mean so much. Players' meetings only mean so much. Let's just play some bloody good basketball.
Yeah, who's most likely to step up in the next game and bring, not necessarily have an amazing scoring outburst and, you know, put up 25 or something like that, but someone who's going to come in and set the tone and bring the energy that can really get the whole squad going?
I'm going with Damari Carroll because I think he has continued to do it even over this sort of poor stretch. And he does it low-key and not getting sort of the kudos. Whereas Rodion does it and everyone loses their minds. And they do because he's a rookie and he's great. And we sort of expect less of him. But the expert, Damari's been doing this all season for us. He's been one of our most consistent performers. You know, you could go with the easy ones of D'Angelo Russell. But in terms of lesser lights, I would probably go with the other guys. I would go with Damari Carroll.
The other guys series we're running at otgbasketball.com for all the other guys, you know, not the all-stars, not the big names that get all the notoriety. But I like Damari. You could probably say Damari's been doing it for two seasons for the Nets. He's been, you know, setting the tone, doing the examples. Rodion's gets all the hype, but he does still miss his assignments out there. I know Kenny was yelling at him for not stepping up defensively on one of those rotations. I think I like when D'Angelo comes out, though, and we saw this a couple games on that winning streak where he got a steal early on the game, got the easy transition bucket, got the deflections. I think we really need to disrupt the ball handlers early in the game because that's really what's killing us. Point guard, shooting guard, small forward, they're just getting in front of the paint of that free throw line area, getting those easy shots, building up the confidence, breaking down the defense, giving up those open threes. So I want to see the guards. Is it D'Lo? Is it Caris LeVert? Is it Spencer Dinwiddie? I want to see them start disrupting the ball handlers, especially in that pick and roll, and just make them feared that they're going to lose the ball or get it stolen.
Yeah, it seems to me that obviously those three guys are going to be the most important players over this sort of four games and for the rest of the season. We sort of talked about it at
both ends too. You could argue not even just offensively. I think offensively and defensively, you could say they're the most important guys because that's just where the ball is most of the time in NBA games.
Yeah, I think that's plain and simple. But in terms of obviously defensively, I think they just need to show the right energy and make the right plays and not sort of, you know, sag off and if fight when fighting through screens, you know, show that little bit of extra juice than you might not normally do and just make things a little bit hard. Wave your hands in the air, do whatever you got to do. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a tough stretch. And I mean, we could go on for days, Nick, but is there anything else we wanted to touch on before we end this lovely pod?
Yeah, no, if the Nets lose on Monday, we're canceling the bus. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, Jack, always good to talk to you, even if it's after a loss. Thank you, everybody, for all the questions and views and listens and everything like that. If you want to listen to previous shows, iTunes, Box Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com-radio, and YouTube.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters, the more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's UNIFYDHealing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.